The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Well, here we go. Hour number two, Sports Talk 1240 from our beautiful studios in West Babylon, New York, eastern end of Long Island. Welcome to hour two of Sports Talk 1240. I'm Unko Asonye. Raymond Moore sits across from me. Brian Graves, the engineer on the other side of the glass. We'll be joined by Seth Gruen in hour one. Gary Davenport from Bleacher Report will join us in just a few minutes to talk NFL. Well, if you expected the Giants and Saints to have a battle of quarterbacks, Super Bowl MVP Eli Manning versus perennial gunslinger Drew Brees, you were profoundly disappointed. In fact, it was the defensive stalwart that nobody wanted and nobody really saw coming. Two offensive touchdowns the entire game. In fact, the Giants' first touchdown, it wasn't even an offensive touchdown. It was a blocked field goal taken all the way to the crib. Now, the good news, at least for the Giants, is that they pulled it out. They took the win. You know, everyone's favorite domestic violence kicker, Josh Brown, hit the game-winning field goal. 16-13 was the final. And, well, if you owned Odell Beckham Jr. in your fantasy league,
I'm talking about that.
You were very, very disappointed.
Not really. Yeah, 12 points, but don't talk about fantasy.
No, that's if you did PPR or even 0.5 PPR. For some of us whose leagues don't have PPR, you got a solid 8 or maybe an 8.6. But enough about the fantasy gridiron. Let's get to the real one. Ray, I think from this game, what we learned about the Giants was that they can be chameleon-like. You know, that defense that they spent so much money on in the offseason can win you games. But that offense that was supposed to be a juggernaut, they still got some work to do.
They got a lot of work to do. I feel like most of the, you know, habits that they have in the preseason is actually affecting now into the regular season. I mean, last week they had 20 points against the Cowboys, but, you know, Cowboys defense isn't really that great. Then you had 20 points against the Saints, who probably, you know, I mean, pretty much the field goals, but it was really a struggling performance for the offense in general for the Giants, because I thought for sure Eli was going to have his way against the Saints, but, you know, I just felt like they had their chances to make this more of a blowout and had missed opportunities during the game. And the one thing I have to say about this is that the Giants should take this game as a way of saying, well, we won with the defense, and I think that's something that's going to help us in the long run, because most of the time it's been, well, the offense needs to be consistent almost every game. Now you see the defense now pulling them out, saying that, yo, we got you, we got your back, because you don't need to always have Odell score like 3 touchdowns a game, or you need to have Eli have some crazy performances and still lose. So I think it's a good thing for the defense that they won this game, because it tells you that they're more balanced now, not just an offensive team.
I mean, if we're going to look at their performance as a whole, however, you do have to look at the 3 turnovers they had. None on interceptions, which is good for Eli Manning, but fumble 1, fumble 2, and fumble 3. I mean, that's one thing where we see the weak link of this team really is its offensive line.
Yeah, big time, because their offensive line is pretty much what connects the team into making sure that they get their points from the running game and also from the passing game and protecting Eli.
But anyway, we can only tell you so much about football. Our guest on the line can tell you more. Gary Davenport from Bleacher Report joins us here on Sports Talk 1240. Gary, it's Unko and Raymond. How are you tonight?
Oh, doing well, gentlemen. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you with us. Your takeaway from the Giants' first game, rather, at the Meadowlands. We were just talking, I think you probably heard us talking a little bit, how the Giants really need to find their way offensively. What do you think of their offensive performance today?
I think you nail on the head. The turnovers are obviously a problem. The offensive line remains a question mark for the team. And until they can run the ball a little bit more consistently than what they've seen, that's, you're going to get the offensive inconsistency. It's hard to sustain drives if you can't run the ball effectively. You don't want to necessarily have to count on Eli Manning dropping back and throwing the ball 50 times a game. I just don't know if that's a winning recipe for football. But still, they're 2-0. It doesn't really matter how you get the W, just so long as you do.
Do you find it a little bit odd that the Giants didn't address that in the offseason? I mean, we know that the defense was really seen as a priority, but they apparently got confidence in Jennings and Vereen sort of sharing that backfield. But why do you think they left it like that?
You know, it's the salary cap era, I think, is a large portion of it. I mean, look at the Seattle Seahawks and the problems they have on the offensive line. They've got less money invested in that offensive line than any team in the NFL. I think they're paying about $9 million, just over $9 million this year to their offensive linemen total. And it's because, you know, they've got so much money tied up in other positions. There's only so much money to spend, and you look at what the Giants sunk into that defense in this offseason, well over $100 million in guaranteed money. You know, there's just only so many guys you can pay, and sometimes you just have to look at a position and say, okay, we can get by with, you know, Jennings and Paul Perkins, who hasn't even, I believe, been active yet, and Vereen. The question is, will it work out? And that's how you differentiate the great general managers from the not-so-hot ones.
I look at Gary's Raymond. I look at Eli, and he had more than 350 yards of passing but no touchdowns. I mean, is it more of what the Saints did against him, or was it just he missed opportunities in the red zone that could have been more than, you know, field goal type of game?
Probably a little bit of both. And like you guys said, you hate to see the three turnovers, although none of those were directly Eli's responsibility. This game, they were able to get away with it. There are going to be games, though, where you have to be, when you're driving the ball successfully, you've got to punch it in the end zone. You cannot settle for three. Better to get it out of your system in a game that you can pull out at home than, you know, a month from now when you're on the road. So the Giants, I mean, they should be happy that they're 2-0, obviously. They should be very pleased with the way that defense has played, given what it looked like last year. But there are still things to be worked on.
And speaking of the Giants, their opponent last week, the Dallas Cowboys, they just pulled out a big win in Landover, Maryland, against Washington. What do you think of Dak Prescott with his first 2 weeks under center in the NFL?
Yeah, I've been impressed. It doesn't seem to be, the situation is not too big for him. He doesn't seem nervous. He's not out there forcing the action. He's done a good job of taking what defenses have given him. He's not making mistakes, turning the ball over, which is what will kill a young quarterback. You know, the Dallas offense, would it be better with Tony Romo under center? Absolutely. But the offense isn't the problem in Dallas. Their problems are on the defensive side of the ball. They've got no pass rush. Their front seven has been decimated by either injuries or suspensions. And if you can't get after the quarterback at all, you're not going to be able to win consistently, because in the NFL, if you can't pressure the quarterback, if you let him sit back there and take his time, look through his progressions, any competent NFL cornerback will tear you to pieces.
True. So going around the NFL, I think one of the most impressive wins today was the Patriots. Now, they just lost Jimmy Garoppolo to a shoulder injury, and it seems to be okay, but we're not sure if we can start on Thursday. You think this shows that the greatness of Belichick, that it's much more than Brady for the Patriots?
Yeah, Garoppolo played well in both games. It was unfortunate that he went down today, but at this point, the 2-0 Patriots, they're playing with found money. I mean, they could lose the next two games, and if they come out, I guarantee you that if you told Bill Belichick going into the season, hey, those four games will be without Brady, you'll come out of it 2-2. He'd take it. And you look, the Dolphins are 0-2. The Bills are 0-2. The Jets are 1-1. They've got a one-game lead on the Jets, and they're already up two games on the rest of the division. So even if they lose these next two games, worst-case scenario, they're down a game to the Jets. The AFC East, I mean, I know it's early. It's only 2 weeks into the season. The AFC East race is over. The Jets are going to win. I mean, the Patriots are going to win the division again.
What makes that division such a lock for New England? Is it really just because Brady and Belichick are that good? Or do you think it might be sort of a mind game that the rest of the division kind of looks up and says, well, there's no point in playing for first. Maybe we just go for second.
Oh, I do think that the Patriots are in every other team in that division's head. And you look at the Jets are a good football team. They could very well contend for a wild card spot. I just do not see a way that they're going to be able to hold serve with the New England Patriots for the length of the entire season. Miami is a deeply flawed football team. And right now the Buffalo Bills are a dumpster fire.
So. Yeah.
Oy, oy, oy. Let's talk about, you know, I don't even want to go to the Jets right now. Since the Bills lost that offensive showdown, what a contrast. Jets-Bills being an offensive showdown between those two teams. But they fire Greg Roman instead of the defense that allowed 37 points against the Jets. What's going on up there?
Oh, it's rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. You know, they had to do something. There was pressure from the ownership to appease the disgruntled fans or whatnot. Now there's reports coming out that ownership is meeting with players behind the head coach's back. And the decision, you know, Rex Ryan's not going to fire his brother.
He should,
though. Greg Roman was the sacrificial lamb. This is only the beginning. The death wash for Buffalo has begun. I don't know that Rex Ryan will. I kind of figured he'd be fired after this season because I didn't expect them to make the playoffs, and they're supposedly a playoffs or bust edict that was given by the Pegulas in Buffalo. I don't even know if he'll last the season now. I think we could see a mid-season firing there, although I don't know who you would elevate to be interim head coach now that you fired the offensive coordinator, and I'm assuming if you fire one Ryan, the other would follow.
Aye, aye, aye. Do you think, and I think that before we go to the Jets, this warrants asking, that little placebo, those huge two games that the Jets dropped against the Bills last year, does it seem like they kind of came over the hump against Buffalo, or did Buffalo just mess the bed?
The Jets were a 10-win team last year. They should have beaten Buffalo one of those games, and if they had, they would probably be in the playoffs. I think one of the Jets' biggest problems right now is Todd Bowles continues to be just ultra-conservative. When it comes to fourth and short situations, he's going to take the 3 points 99 times out of 100. And it cost him this year against Cincinnati. It cost him last year in one of those games against Buffalo. Sometimes when you're looking at fourth and one inside your opponent's 5-yard line, you just have to go for it. And even if you don't get it, you have to trust that defense and that stout defensive line can get you the ball back quickly because you've pinned your opponent deep. I just do not understand why Bowles always kicks the field goal.
And let's talk about the Jets now that we're on it. This was supposedly at least a top 10 defense, at least in the running and in the passing game. They were middle of the pack last year, but this year they're just flat out getting burned. What's going on over there?
Yeah, they're getting torn up on big plays. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I was prepared to give Revis a little bit of a pass for week one because he's not. He's not the first cornerback A.J. Green's made look bad, and he ain't going to be the last one. But to give up that 80-something yard touchdown, you know, right off the get in that Buffalo game, I mean, you have to wonder if he hasn't lost a step or two. And outside of Revis, there are questions in that secondary. As a Cleveland Browns fan, I can freely tell you, Buster Skrine is not a guy you want in man coverage all night long on an excellent NFL wide receiver. It's not going to work out well for you. Calvin Pryor has never, you know, lived up to that first-round billing. The defensive line in New York is phenomenal, but there's a lot of pressure on them, and those linebackers, they're going to have to get pressure on the quarterback quickly because they can't leave. The way that Jets secondary is playing, they can't leave them out there for very long, or somebody is going to get open, and they're going to get burnt for a big play. So right now I would say that is easily the biggest problem facing the Jets right now is they have to figure out a way to fix that secondary.
You know, staying to the AFC, overall, you have the Steelers 2-0, Texans 2-0, Patriots 2-0, the Broncos who won today also 2-0. Is it safe to say that these are the four teams that are probably going to win the division by the end of the season?
You know, I don't know that I'm quite ready to hand the AFC West to Denver. I think Kansas City and Oakland will still have something. Now, there's a lot of talent in that division. The Raiders kind of fell flat today against Atlanta. I think they got a little too hyped up by that win over the Saints. Pittsburgh, yeah, they beat Cincinnati. I mean, I think you can say that Pittsburgh is going to get in the playoffs one way or another. They're either going to be a wild card or they're going to win the AFC North. And right now they look like probably the best team in football through the first two games of the season. The Patriots are a lock in the East. And the AFC South, I mean, it's looking like Houston right now. They've got a two-game lead over the Colts, a two-game lead over the Jaguars. And I mean, does anyone really expect the Tennessee Titans to contend for a playoff spot?
Not really, no.
With this hot start by the Texans, and now they're going to play the Patriots on a short week. The Patriots are either going to roll out a third-string quarterback or some if they sign a veteran off the street. I don't know what the plan is going to be there. But they could easily get out to a nice 3-0 start, and it's going to give them confidence. J.J. Watt had a sack and a half for the team today. It looks like he's rounding back into form. And if he gets healthy and he's anywhere near 100%, you combine him with Jadeveon Clowney, who is starting to look like the number one overall pick in the 2014 NFL Draft, and Whitney Mercilus, who was the AFC Defensive Player of the Week in Week 1, that could make for a frightening pass rush.
I look at the Bengals, and they lost today. And I look at this team, and, you know, the loss that they had last year in the postseason was probably the dumbest loss I've ever seen because, you know, let's face it, they should have won that game, went for the penalty and the fumble. I mean, are they even considered to be a legit Super Bowl contender at all?
They just got beat today, and they have not had much success running the football the first 2 weeks of the 2016 season, and it's given me some doubts about their new offensive coordinator. And he doesn't seem to be quite as adventurous with his formations and scheming ways to get guys in single coverage as Hugh Jackson was. You know, the Bengals are probably still going to win at least 10 or 11 games. Before the season, I predicted that both Cincinnati and Pittsburgh would make the playoffs out of the North. One is a wild card, one is a division winner. I don't know that I've seen anything to change my mind there yet. Yes, the Baltimore Ravens are 2-0, but it's been kind of a shaky 2-0. I mean, they went down 20-0 against the Cleveland Browns today before the Browns remembered they were the Browns.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Baltimore is a team. Baltimore, to me, is one of the hardest teams in the AFC to figure out because there's a lot of veterans. You know John Harbaugh can coach, but they're old, and they're one injury away from it's a house of cards. Essentially, and I just don't know that they're going to be able to hold it together for 17 weeks.
Since Ray dragged us to the AFC North, we might as well go back to the team that you just mentioned, the Cleveland Browns, particularly under center. Now, Robert Griffin III is out till about week 9 or 10. Didn't have great success. Josh McCown comes in and starts throwing darts before the Ravens sort of woke up. Is Robert Griffin III really done?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's done in Cleveland at this point. I mean, he just won't slide, and that's what got him injured again. And given where the Browns are going to be picking probably first overall in the 2017 draft, it wouldn't surprise me a bit if they wind up the worst team in the NFL. Plus, they have the Eagles' first-round pick next season, although I don't think that one's going to be quite as high as Cleveland was hoping for. So I think you'll see McCown as a placeholder for the rest of the season, and now I understand why they were so reluctant to part with him in a trade to Dallas or whatever. But, yeah, the route is going to be go the rookie route next year. We might even see Cody Kessler at quarterback for the Browns at some point this season, which as a Cleveland fan, let me tell you, I'm so looking forward to that.
That'll be interesting. So, you know, sticking to the NFC, now going to the NFC, actually. Now you have the four team. Well, I'm just saying NFC now. You got now the Giants, you know, they're pretty much NFC East are 2-0. Panthers, they won today. The Cardinals won today. And I think in the South, I think I'm missing one division. What's the other division I'm missing?
The West?
No, I had the West already.
The West, the North, the North, South, and the East.
The East. Oh, the North, yeah. The Packers and Vikings are playing today pretty much for whoever's number one. But aside from all that, is there any team in the NFC that's probably going to be surprising everybody in terms of being a playoff team?
Yeah. Heading into this weekend, I actually said to keep an eye on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I thought they might play the Arizona Cardinals tough today, so that goes to show how much I know about football.
Oh, man.
I mean, there's some talent in Tampa, but today just showed you they're a young team, and sometimes with young teams, if things start to go bad, it just snowballs. I think a lot of people might consider the Giants as a playoff team to be something of a surprise, but I think right now they look like, so far as offense and defense, the most balanced team in that division. So if I had to pick somebody in the NFC East right now, I'd probably pick the Giants. Other than that, I don't really see a team that's going to be able to hang in there for 17 weeks. Maybe Atlanta, But they looked, see, even there, they did not look good in week one against Tampa Bay, went to Oakland today and won the game. So there are just so many teams in the NFC that you just never know who, which team is going to show up. You don't know if it's Jekyll or Hyde. You don't know if it's going to be the good Falcons or the bad Falcons, or the good Buccaneers or the bad Buccaneers. I think we've already got a pretty good beat on who the playoff teams in the NFC are going to be. Arizona, Green Bay, Carolina, Seattle, I think, will make the playoffs, although they've got some problems of their own they need to figure out on the offensive line. And, you know, we might get a surprise wild card. It's just, it's still awfully early, and I know people like form conclusions after just a couple games, and we think we know. But if there's one thing I've learned about the NFL is that it loves to show you how much you don't know from me.
That is real. We're talking to Gary Davenport from Bleacher Report, NFL expert. You just mentioned the Seahawks. I want to go to their matchup with the Rams. First off, how big is it that L.A., who is probably in for a very rough year, but they went back to the L.A. Coliseum and got their first win reinvigorated into L.A.? How big was that for them?
I do not for the life of me understand why the Seattle Seahawks cannot beat the Rams, but that's either three or four in a row that the Rams have beat Seattle. I mean, the Rams are a team still haven't scored an offensive touchdown this year. Yet they win that. I mean, give up 28 to San Francisco and look worse than Cleveland, which I didn't even think was possible. And then come out today and just completely shut. Seattle's got some serious problems on the offensive line right now. They cannot run the ball because they can't open. They're just not getting any push at all up front, so they can't open holes. And their offense has degenerated now into Russell Wilson scrambling around, hoping that someone will get open behind the defense and he can get a big play. That's essentially become Seattle's offense. And as we're seeing, that's not something that's going to work high percentage. I think they're only converting about 30% of their third downs. You know, Pete Carroll will get it figured out. He's one of the best coaches in football. But if I were a Seattle fan right now, I'd be more than a little worried.
So I think we can pretty much assume that Marshawn Lynch is greatly missed in Seattle, true?
Yeah, but to be honest, I don't know that he would have a whole lot more success than what Thomas Rawls or Christine Michael have.
Oh, really?
It's not the backs. I mean, and Michael today, I think, had 10 carries for 60 yards. He didn't have a terrible day, although that fumble at the end was a backbreaker. There's just no holes. There's nowhere to, it doesn't matter how good a running back you are if you've got nowhere to go. And, I mean, the Rams just completely dominated the line of scrimmage today. Aaron Donald was in their backfield the whole game. You'd have thought he was a member of the Seahawks as much time as he spent back there.
Oh, you know, going to court talking about NFL, I want to talk to you more also now on fantasy football.
Here we go.
Because I need a little help here. See, this has been a terrible 2 weeks for me already. Now that I have Brandon Marshall out, now I have Doug Martin now, apparently. And then Russell Wilson with his ankle sprain, pretty much limiting him to points. And Winston had just had a terrible performance today against the Cardinals, which kind of, you know, pretty much ended my game today of actually winning. Is there any running backs that I can get in free agency that can at least sustain what maybe Doug Martin can do?
Guys that are going to be available on the majority of most waiver. I mean, obviously, Charles Sims is probably going to be rostered. Theo Riddick in Detroit is probably already going to be rostered.
Yeah.
Maybe the rookie in Detroit, Dwayne Washington, but I don't know that he's going to get probably more than 8-10 touches a game. I know it was a kick in the teeth day for running backs. Danny Wood has hurt.
Yeah.
Amir Abdullah is hurt. Jonathan Stewart's hurt. Doug Martin's hurt.
Everybody's hurt.
I think all we can do at this point is hope that come tomorrow some of these injuries aren't that severe. I know that I already saw news out of San Diego that they're hopeful that Woodhead's isn't season-ending, that maybe it wasn't as bad as they originally believed, and he's just got a sprained MCL, so hopefully he'll only be out, you know, 4 to 6 weeks as opposed to the rest of the season. It's great news if you're a Theo Riddick owner or a Charles Sims owner, because those guys just went, you know, from third-down pass catchers to featured backs. But 2 weeks into the season, and I got fantasy teams already that I've already performed the last rite, so I had Priest come in and...
Oh, man. You know what? Since Ray's going to ask one, I might as well ask one myself. Now, I went very running back heavy in one of my favorite leagues, but I'm looking straight at Adrian Peterson, who obviously was a first-round pick, and I'm thinking I want to get off the ship. Should I?
Yeah, it depends on what you can get in return. I mean, I think your best bet there, if you want to get off the ship, is to, if at all possible, hold out until he has a big game and then try to sell high. I mean, he's trying to sell him coming off of, what was it, 19 yards that he had last week or whatever. You're not going to get any kind of value back. And Adrian Peterson owners aren't the only ones freaking out. Todd Gurley has done next to nothing so far this season.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And you look at that Rams offense, and I don't know that that's a trend that's suddenly going to reverse itself. And I already mentioned all those injured guys. You can add Arian Foster to that list. Shock and amazement, Arian Foster's hurt. It's already been a rough year for running back. I mean, this today, just to see half a dozen of them, and the running back position has just become so volatile that if you try to sell at this point when a guy's not doing well, you're going to get rooked. I mean, you're just not going to get anything back that's close to what you spent on Adrian Peterson. So I think for now, anyway, if at all possible, I mean, if you're desperate, you just have to make a move to keep your season afloat, then you got to do what you got to do. But if at all possible, try to be patient. And, you know, it takes Adrian Peterson, it takes one play for him to break off an 80-yard touchdown run, and then he has, you know, 130, 140-yard night. And after a game like that, that's when you want to stop him.
Going into wide receiver, Brandon Marshall, he had, like, a MCL apparently sprained. He's not locked to play next week. Is there any receiver out there that could possibly, like, just fill in possibly 10 to 12 points in free agency?
Oh, it's Travis Benjamin now. Travis Benjamin is a guy you really should have picked up last week out in San Diego with Keenan Allen getting hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he stepped into that number one receiver role today for San Diego. Did not miss a beat, caught two touchdowns, and we saw him put up numbers in Cleveland with, you know, nothing at quarterback. You know, Anquan Boldin's probably available in most leagues, and it seems like Matthew Stafford's looking his way half a dozen times a game or so. So I think today he had like four catches for around 4 yards and a touchdown. You know, there are a few guys out there that might get you a stat line like that. Tajay Sharp in Tennessee. The kid in Pittsburgh, Eli Rogers, might be available in some leagues still. And a lot of those guys have just already been snatched up. Waiver wire is just full of sharks, man. You can't leave any meat in the water for any time at all. It gets snatched up and eaten.
That is a fact. Last question before we let you go for the night. We started this talking about the Giants. Might as well end this talking about the Giants. Yes, on the fantasy side. The Giants defense is still available. Do you buy them as a legitimate defense and start and special teams unit going forward?
You know, the matchup would still have to be decent for me to want to roll those dice. I'm not going to want to play them against, you know, Carolina or a team like that. But if they're going up against the Sosa, and they did great today against the Saints, which is a good offensive team, but the Saints were on the road and they have a tendency to underperform when they get out of the Superdome. If the matchup's good and they're going against, say, a bottom half of the NFL offense or a team that has a bit of a shaky offensive line where a Vernon and Pierre Paul and those boys will be able to get after it, then, yeah, streaming defense, I usually don't invest much of anything in my team defense. Like this year, I picked up Philadelphia in a lot of leagues because their first two games of the season were Cleveland and Chicago. And then week three, I'll look through the waiver wire and see which one of those has the best matchup, and I'll just go from there. Would I consider the Giants at this point, given how they've played so far this season? Absolutely.
Sounds good to us. Gary Davenport from Bleacher Report. You can follow him on Twitter at IDPSharks. Gary, thanks so much for your time tonight, and we'll hear from you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
My pleasure, gentlemen.
Interesting stuff.
So once again, it's always great when we can have a football guest who's not only unafraid to talk fantasy football, but let's give you a couple of his credentials. Senior staff writer for Fantasy Sharks. He's an IDP writer. That's for those who stream defensive players, that is, at Roto World. And he won the 2015 Fantasy Sports Something Award winner. I can't believe I really blew that abbreviation, but the man knows what he's doing.
Yeah,
so
it certainly does. If I need to ask him about this, because right now I'm pretty much screwed right now.
Look, just don't text him tonight, okay?
Well, I'm going to be 0-2 in my other league, but I need to pick up a running back because these running backs are just falling down now. It's sad.
Whatever. Look, before we go to break, that interview was brought to you by Lawrence Woodmere Academy. What's Lawrence Woodmere Academy? I will tell you. 10-acre campus on Long Island's South Shore. They go from preschool to 12th grade. They've got an open house November the 8th, and it is a 4-year college prep school. LawrenceWoodmere.org for more information. Seriously, you should check it out. Back after this on Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
And no more motions left. Play clock down to three. First and 10 at the 12. Another handoff to Forte. Cuts it back at the five. He's into the end zone. Touchdown. Matt Forte with his third rushing touchdown of the game. And the Jets, they've got a two-score lead and some with 4:02 to go.
And with that touchdown by Matt Forte, a lot of the Buffalo Bills leaving the stadium, Bob.
That's the call from Bob Wischusen and Marty Lyons on the New York Jets Radio Network, 98.7 FM, ESPN, New York Radio. That's where the call came from, and that's what we're going to talk about now. Unquan Sonye, Raymond Mora, just a few minutes left here on Sports Talk 1240 for this weekly edition. And really, Ray, I know that Fitzpatrick really has to be on point to make that offense go around. But I will tell you what, when Matt Forte can go, he makes this offense completely different.
I think that makes him a top five offense, to be honest. The way he plays, the what he does, like he's pretty much an all-around running back. He can do everything. He can block, he can run, he can catch. He fits perfectly in what they want to do. And if he goes, they pretty much top five offense. If he plays, you know, solid, they're still a good offense. So I think Forte with this addition makes him a better team overall, especially on offense.
I think that when we also look at the way the Jets are constructed, let's be honest, even with all the weapons that they have, you wouldn't really call them an offensive team to start the season. But now you kind of have to.
Yeah, no,
that's their identity now.
Never saw that coming. I always thought they'll be. There's always been known as a defensive team, but now they're surely shifting to becoming an offensive team with Fitzpatrick leading them.
Now, here's a question that really merits asking. For the record, I still don't think that Darrell Revis is done. I do not. 2 weeks in, call me week five or week six. But with the way that the secondary looks and Gary Davenport talked about it just this past half hour, are the Jets now going to have to start playing shootout games? Like, that's very, very weird to me. Will this defense, will the secondary ever rebound? Because right now it doesn't look like it.
It doesn't look like it at all. I feel like they're going to have to do something in that secondary just with communication, because most of the time, the reason why they get up these big plays is because of miscommunications on certain plays. I mean, that Bills game, there was the first one where Revis got burned. I mean, let's be honest, he kind of got burned by an ex-Olympian. and Goodwin, who scored on him. Then the second one, Greg Salas, who used to be a Jet, he just scored on them on a miscommunication play
as
well.
That's all sorts of insulting. All the only thing needed to make that game more insulting if the Jets lost was IK and Impali to come in and sack Ryan Fitzpatrick and then finish celebrating punching the air.
But, I mean, it's just the disaster of the Bills anyway. I mean, I feel like the Jets, they won that game pretty much in that first half when they were up big. They could have been up bigger if it was missed opportunities with the field goals, but they won the game. That's what counts. And then looking at it right now, you look at Todd Bowles and Fitzpatrick. They were talking about the game, exactly, you know, what happened and what to look for next.
They fought. I thought they scrapped hard. They made some plays. You know, our big-time players made some big-time plays. I thought Fitzpatrick played a good ball game, and, you know, they scored some points, which was scarce in the last couple of times we played them.
How what did you make of Brandon tonight in terms of productivity and coming back from what was going to be a pretty serious injury?
Oh, he's a tough guy. You know, he came back. He made some plays. He made some one-on-one plays. I think all the receivers did, and they came up big for us.
What went through your mind when you saw Brandon take that ugly ball?
I was just hoping it wasn't serious, you know, the way it laid down and the way it looked. And, you know, there's this a knee injury. The way injuries been happening these days are tough, but he came back and played, so I'm proud of him.
How bad did you miss
it? Was game two. We needed to win game two. You don't ever want to start 0-2. The fact it's a division rival, we knew it was going to be a tough game. For them to come in here and fight, I'm proud of them.
It was great. I mean, I think last week, I don't think that's an indication of what we're going to be as an offense this year. I think today was a little bit more what we expect. But I think the biggest part for me and the part that I get excited about is going into halftime with the lead, coming out. They put 14 points on the board right away with the touchdown and then the turnover, the fumble for the touchdown. And there wasn't a hanging heads, and there was confidence in the huddle. It was a great feeling. The guys were up, and we went out and scored points like we're supposed to score points. And so I thought that was a great sign for our team. And even Jalen Marshall recovering from losing the ball. He's not hanging his head. He made a couple huge plays in the second half.
And, you know, from that clip, pretty much from SNY, they recorded that and they put it on the website and all that thing. But looking at what Fitzpatrick said, the one thing that caught my attention was he said that is what they expect that what they expect to be every game with their offense. And pretty much for us Jet fans, we say that I don't think we expect them to score 37 points a game. I mean, we always thought their strongest point of the team was the defense, but we never saw that they could score more than 30 to win a game. Would you agree with that?
At this point, you sort of take the production and you take it. You absolutely take it, because what the Jets now have proven that offensively, there really isn't much to worry about right now. Ryan Fitzpatrick, you would have liked to see a bit more efficiency from him, but the good news is, even though he only had one touchdown pass, it led to three other touchdowns, all coming from Matt Forte. So that's a very good thing. But going forward, when Forte can't get those yards, somebody has to do something, and it's going to fall on Fitzpatrick to be able to pull that off. But since we've continued to sort of look ahead, last time we were here, we didn't see the Jets being anywhere near this. But now going into week three, they have a good shot to go up 2-1 against an opponent that, you know, it could go either way.
Well, it can go either way, and they lost today. And Oxford have had a terrible game, and those who have him in fantasy should be ashamed of themselves for starting them, even though they thought Swift would do the same thing he did last time, or at least somewhat to it. But
Time out. You just lost me. What are you talking about?
Well, I'm saying Alex Smith's starting, if people start him in fantasy football, they didn't expect him to have the same performance he did last week. And he had less than that. He only had, like, around 3 points, which is kind of bad for a quarterback. But
true.
Going back to week three, you know, these teams are kind of similar, but the only difference is that the Jets are on the road going to Kansas City, where it's probably the hardest place you can play in terms of winning, especially on the road.
Just ask the San Diego Chargers. The Chargers in week one had the Chiefs right where they wanted, and the Chiefs ended up winning in overtime.
Yeah, also ask the Patriots a few years ago when they got the beatdown that we never seen Belichick ever had in Kansas City.
We're not. Wow. Like, you kind of run out of words when it gets to things like that. But the matchup between the Jets and the Chiefs, I look forward to that for a couple reasons. Number one, the Chiefs are a very talented secondary.
Yep.
So now you, as Ryan Fitzpatrick, have to figure out how in the world you're going to navigate that. But on the other hand, this is a good opportunity for the Jets defense to bounce back as a whole. This is the perfect opportunity for that because, again, Alex Smith is even more of a game manager than Ryan Fitzpatrick is. It's not even close. And then to make matters even more interesting, Jeremy Maclin is their standout wideout, and you have Travis Kelce as tight end, but that's about it. And neither of those two are high marquee, be alert, be alert, be alert type of offensive weapons. So this is a good opportunity for the Jets defense to bounce back in a huge way.
It is, but the thing is, what I'm concerned about this game is, can they limit Kansas City's offense? I know that they're not as much of a top five type of offense, but they can score. Even though they have Jamal Charles, they could score. But can they limit them and have Fitzpatrick have time with the offense to score nearly much more points than them, so then they can win the game?
I literally just said that.
No, but I'm just saying in a way where it's like, because, you know, we haven't seen the Jets in quite some while be an offensive type of team, but we don't know if this is a trend where it's like shifting now to that in week three, or where they will revert back to more of a defensive type of game.
Okay, I can give you that. Meanwhile, since we have just a few minutes left in this episode of Sports Talk 1240, let's look at the Giants matchup for next week. They host Washington at MetLife Stadium. Kickoff is at 1 p.m. And I think what's very, very interesting about this matchup is not just that it's an NFC East matchup, but also that you end up touting that big, bad Giants defense against a Washington team that sort of fluctuates, especially since Kirk Cousins is pretty inconsistent.
But also, the Redskins have pretty much bad games against the Giants, even though last time they did beat them. But I expect the Giants to win this game easily, probably up more than 20 points, in my opinion.
That's I think that's a little much.
And why?
No, that's a little much because for Kirk Cousins' inconsistencies, they still have a lot of offensive talent between DeSean Jackson, Pierre Garçon, who is okay, but Jordan Reed is a fantastic tight end. Still have Matt Jones in that backfield. It's really all going to come down to what makes the Giants defense so much better, and that's their pass rush. If you can get to Kirk Cousins and you can disrupt him, you have yourself a chance to win this game. But that's not going to be easy by any means. I mean, the Cowboys are a terrible defensive team, and Washington almost led to the final horn until Dak Prescott led his team down the field. So they're not just going to go away.
Yeah, but the Redskins' defense is probably at least in the bottom five. I mean, they're not great at all. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Giants do pull up that many points, more than what the Redskins would put up against the Giants' defense.
Okay, then. So since we're there, let's do a little bit of this or that. So who's the bigger lock to win week three?
Giants or Jets?
Yeah.
Giants, because they're pretty much the most balanced team in NFC East, and pretty much I believe that they're going to win this game easily, more so than they should have today against the Saints.
Okay, I can give you that. Who's going to have more rushing yards, Matt Forte or the combination of Shane Vereen and Rashad Jennings?
I mean, come on, you really going to ask me that?
Yeah, I'm going to ask you that.
Come on, you know it's Matt Forte. I mean, for sure it's Matt Forte.
Okay. Let's try this. More receiving yards, Victor Cruz or Quincy Enunwa?
Well, you're not putting in Brandon Marshall there because you don't know if he's going to play or not. But
I am intentionally matching up Enunwa with Cruz. I'm intentionally doing that.
I think Enunwa, because I think he's more of a hybrid type of – I don't know what he is right now, but it's pretty much prime as either a tight end slash wide receiver. But I think he's going to get more touches than people think.
See, I think I'm going to go with Victor Cruz because Cruz came up with a huge catch late in the fourth quarter.
He did.
And he's working his way back. And it's going to be really important for the Giants because, let's face it, they're already slumping offensively as it is. and Odell Beckham Jr., who was in on one of my other teams. I have a bunch of teams, by the way, so don't get the references.
I have five teams, too. So how many teams you got?
I have five teams.
Okay. So, you know, we're pretty much in the same situation where we are.
But anyway, Beckham Jr. was a first-round draft pick for me, and he got me 8.6 points. What does that have to do with real football? I will tell you. Because he is seeing more increased looks, and also because the Giants have a lot more weapons at their disposal between Sterling Shepard and even Shane Vereen out of the backfield, I think Victor Cruz is going to see the ball a lot more. Even going back to those years when he was the number one guy, he may not see quite that many targets, but as the year goes on, I think those numbers are going to start to climb up. Then by the time people think, oh, Victor Cruz is back, Odell Beckham Jr. will go back to doing what he normally does.
You just better hope that Cruz doesn't fumble like he did today, because that was that fumble, they kind of killed their drive. They had a chance to score right there. We knew all these fancy moves, and he got stripped.
Listen, the Giants had three very, very crucial turnovers, and without that defense, the Saints walk out of there flying back to New Orleans with grins on their faces instead of just straight-up frustration.
Yeah. So looking at that from the Giants' perspective of winning against the Redskins, you going to pick the Giants, though?
As in the bigger week one lock, it really does have to be the Giants, because the Jets are on the road. They're at Kansas City. Kansas City, for all their problems, is no slouch.
I'll pick both New York teams to win, though, in week three. I think the Jets are going to win on the road in a close game.
Well, we weren't really going down that route, but since we're already here, sure. I think what will make the Jets very, very crucial is how well they use special teams. Because Nick Folk had a very shaky week one, bounced back huge this past Thursday against Buffalo.
Big time.
Arrowhead is a zoo. But if he comes back to normal, when the Jets stall, he can bail them out. And I think that's going to be very key for the Jets this year, because they feel very streaky. For all their offensive prowess, they feel very, very streaky. Because I could see them, I do pick them winning next week, but I could see next week being a 13-10 showdown.
But this is like another test for the Jets, though, to prove to the league that they're a serious contender going for the playoffs, and they win these types of games. Now, they did beat the Bills, and, you know, they're pretty much a dumpster fire, like Gary just said. The Bills are the Bills. They're not going anywhere. But this type of game, they should have beat the Bengals. It could have been 2-0. But this type of game itself, I think it's another test to say, you know, are they for real, or are they just pretenders? Are they just being the weaker teams, or are they really going to beat a serious team like the Chiefs?
But again, it's week three.
Yeah, but these are important games.
Every game is important. There are only 16 an entire season. But I'm saying it's week three before we can start calling anybody contenders or pretenders, because there is still a whole lot of season left to play. But for the Jets this week, the defense needs a huge bounce back game. We've said it once. We'll say it again. Over under 14. How many points are the Jets defense giving up?
Over.
Ew,
over. It's not good. It's not going to be under. This is going to be one of those close games again.
But so it's going to be a shootout. So it's going to be a shootout.
I don't think it will be a shootout, but it'll be like a 28 to 24 type of game. Maybe lower than that. That's just me.
Ooh, I could weirdly see that.
I don't see like a 30, like we see with the Bills, a 37, 31 type of game. I think that's just like,
if that happens again, we have a serious problem.
If that happens again, you better hope Fitzpatrick has more than 350 yards of passing and has at least three touchdowns.
The day that we have now reached that part of the day where it's no longer, okay, if Ryan Fitzpatrick does this, we're okay. You need Ryan Fitzpatrick, because otherwise opponents are going to stack the box and dare Fitzpatrick to beat them. And to his credit, to his undying credit, because he takes a lot of flack for holding out for training camp to get paid, which was the 100% correct move. You go get paid, man. You go parlay that career year for everything you can get. But coming in, he took a lot of flack for that move and how rusty he looked in game one, including what ended up being the game-clinching interception that he threw to end the game. But now, if he comes back to that career high year of last year, one can tend to be a little more confident in the Jets.
But he's also confident in himself because he said it even in the post game, like, I can make every throw. Like, you know, the media says he can't make the deep balls. And he did make 10 out of the 14 in the Bills game.
But what is he supposed to say? You're supposed to say, I can make every throw. Even if you can't.
Well, true.
So I don't know. I don't know if you can really read too much into that.
But, like, I was impressed, though, that he did make those throws. And it tells you that the defenses are going to start now game planning him a little differently if he keeps continuing to make those deep throws.
And it makes all the sense in the world that they would continue to do so.
I want to be shocked, though, if Fitzpatrick does not have a great game, though, the next week. I want to be shocked.
I mean, the Chiefs have a very solid defense, so I wouldn't really be surprised either. At any rate, we are wrapping up near the end of our show, but we've got all the New York teams that were in action this past week. Who gets your pick for New York Team of the Week?
I would say the Jets because it was a must-win situation for them. That's just me. I felt like they needed to win this game or else they're going to be 0-2. You don't want to be 0-2 and have like a 12% chance of making the playoffs, so it was important for them to win it.
It's weird, my pick, but I'm going to go with the Mets.
Why would you say that?
Well, here's the thing. Yes, they lost to Grom for the season. Yes, they're stumbling their way to the finish line. But as it stands, they lead the wild card. And they still have been managing to take care of business. Against an easy schedule? Sure. But can you imagine if they didn't take care of business? Like, just think about it for 1 second. The Mets already have this reputation that you alluded to earlier in the show for not showing up late in season.
Still
and
have
even
it.
Collapsing late in season. Still Can you imagine what it would look like if they got swept out this entire week? Even with everything going on, nobody would give them a pass. Not a single person would give them a pass.
But they know that this is the opportunity for them to secure that wild card spot. So it's important that they win these games.
Hence, that's why they are my New York Team of the Week. And it makes all the sense in the world.
And you think they'll continue to do that these next couple of games?
They don't really have a choice.
They don't. Because if they miss this, then you're going to see a lot of people gone, like Terry Collins most likely. They don't make it.
And honestly, it's the Braves. It's the Braves. It's the Braves. Listen, I don't know what it's been about the Mets facing the Braves lately, because there have been times where it almost seems like they think the Chipper Jones, Andrew Jones, John Smoltz, those ghosts are still hanging around somewhere. Sometimes I feel like they play as if those guys are still there and it's 1994 and they're about to win the World Series. 1995, excuse me, and they're about to win the World Series again. But This is a big week for them, and I think that even if they won't clinch the wild card, at least not this week. But the more distance they can put between themselves and San Francisco and pretty much everybody else, that would be huge.
Well, I still stick with the Jets because, you know, in those early in the football season, like I said, you don't want to be 0-2. You want to be 1-1 and have ourselves an opportunity due to their schedule that they need that win. And, you know, the next games besides Kansas City, then you got Seattle and you got Pittsburgh and, you know, you got these tough teams that they got to face.
Here's the thing, though. If Seattle's offensive struggles continue, it really might not be that bad a game.
Probably not, but it'll be a close game.
But that's the sort of game, and Seattle's still got a world-class defense, but that's the type of game where you can kind of go in shootout mode and get away with it. They probably won't let you go shootout mode. Don't get me wrong. But because Seattle is so beleaguered offensively, it's a good chance for the Jets defense to sort of get some confidence back. And it won't be the blowout that many people may think it'd be.
But it's also a good chance to see the Jets depth at the wide receiver position. Quincy Anunua, Marshall.
Jalen Marshall.
Like, these guys, they're going to step up. And these guys are fast receivers that they just picked up in preseason. So it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to be if they face a team like that.
So the moral of the story, ladies, gentlemen, boys, and girls, is stack up at whatever position you can. If it's fantasy and you're a running back like me, make sure you have 5 running backs. So that way, when you try to trade Adrian Peterson, it'll work for you. And if you're the Jets, having that many wide receivers who can actually run and catch, it's good for everyone else. Kudos to the Giants, too, because Sterling Shepard is going to be a monster for them.
For sure.
That's going to do it for this edition of Sports Talk 1240. Want to thank our guest Seth Gruen in the 8 o'clock hour, Gary Davenport in the 9 o'clock hour. Want to thank my spectacular co-host Raymond Morrow and our producer and engineer Brian Graves on the other side of the glass. I'm Unkwa Sonye. Every week, Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday from 8 to 10. Special thanks yet again to Lawrence Woodmere Academy. Check out lawrencewoodmere.org for more information. Their open house is November 8th. We're out of here. See you next week.
Yeah.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.